PC.
Metro Access Subcommittee, June 20th, 2016.
Cheryl O'Connor, Metro Access.
Don Scruggs, Metro Access.
Allison Anderson, Metro Access.
Someone with a microphone.
James Carl Rager, Metro Access.
Janice Carpenter, Metro Access. Jennifer Blake, Metro Access. Stephanie Thorne, Metro Access. Celeste Outlaw, Metro Access.
Yakov Rosen, Metro Access.
David Schaefer, ADA Policy and Planning.
Linnea Mobley, MTM.
Jen Weber, MTM.
Carlton Brown, MTM.
Tiffany Neal, First Transit.
Eddie Cranford, First Transit.
Shanika Clary, Metro Access.
John Gray, MV Transportation.
Conrad Marshall, Transdev.
Will Shaw, Citizen Observer.
Suzanne Kimmel from Arlington, Virginia.
Albert Freeman, Suitland, Maryland.
Mark Nash, Metro Access.
Any customers that are arriving that would like to speak during the customer comment period, or you have to do, just raise your hand and staff will come to you and make sure you get on the speaking list when that comes up at 5:30.
Yeah.
So we will begin with a review of the agenda and minutes from the prior meeting. Any additions, changes to the minutes from the prior meeting, please do so. Make it known forth. Hearing the crickets, all those in favor of the minutes, or since someone move it as is?
Move it as is.
Thank you. All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays. Abstentions. The motion carries. The minutes are approved as is. Review of the agenda. Any additions to the agenda? No additions. I guess someone can move the agenda as is. So,
are we going to get an update on the alternative ride program?
Sure, we can have Mr. Blake do that. We can work that in. See how much time we should be able to have.
And also, we need to, even though it's not Metro Access, but see if the SAFE program is affecting Metro Access or
SAFE Track. Okay, we can definitely ask Mr. Blake when we get to that. I guess we can make a motion to amend the agenda per Ms. Rush's suggestions. Move to amend it. Get a second. All those in favor to amend the agenda as per Ms. Rush, please do so by saying aye. Nays. Abstentions. The motion carries. Next, we have customer service and outreach reports.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this time, I'd like to have Mr. Carlton Brown come up to give the customer service report. Right now, just the public comment,
okay.
And we'll do the outreach, and then I'll do a formal introduction.
Okay. Last one, we had five public comments at the AC. The customers have all been contacted, and their issues have been.
Thank you. Outreach.
Thank you.
afternoon. My name is Janice Carpenter. On May the 26th, Service Monitor Stephanie Newsom and myself attended the Resource Fair at Washington Senior Wellness Center in Southeast D.C. The event was well attended, and we were able to share information related to Metro Access with many of the customers there. And on today, we were invited by Senator Benson to St. Margaret's Catholic Church on Addison Road in Capitol Heights. Myself, Allison Anderson, and Leroy Hayford attended this meeting, this monthly meeting, and were able to share information related to Metro Access and the impact that SafeTrack is having on Metro Access, or that it's not having any real effect on Metro Access. But we were able to speak with several people there and have been invited to attend again at their next meeting in September. Thank you.
Thank you. Michael Wilson Award?
Yes, we do have Michael Wilson Award recipient this afternoon, and Ms. Stephanie Thorne is going to make that presentation.
I'm excited to present the Michael Wilson Award for June 2016 to a member of our Office of Eligibility Certification.
This is
the young lady that we are honoring this afternoon is an employee, started as a dispatch agent with MV Transportation, and while demonstrating excellent level of consistency and service, was promoted to support the Office of Eligibility Certification in October 2014. She efficiently coordinates, manages, and dispatches customer trips throughout the transit zone on behalf of the Transit Accessibility Center. While managing the front desk, Ms. Corey, our recipient, provides an outstanding level of customer service. She consistently goes above and beyond every single day. She's taken time to learn the eligibility process from both the Metro Access and Reduced Fare section. And so it is our pleasure this June 2016 to present the Michael Wilson Award to Ms. Shanika Clary.
Say a few words. She loves it.
I just want to say that I'm honored to be given this opportunity. I just thank you. That's all I can say. Thank you for this chance to be here. I really appreciate it from you all.
That's it. It's hard, isn't it?
All right. If okay with the chairman?
Go ahead with the next agenda item.
All righty. At this time, the committee requested a Metro Access customer service review to include information on the overall customer feedback trends as well as public comment trends. And today we have Mr. Carlton Brown with MTM. Mr. Brown is the Quality Assurance Administrative Manager, and MTM, again, is our independent QA contractor on the Metro Access contract. So without further ado, Mr. Brown is here to provide that information to the committee.
Thank you again, Ms. Anderson. Thank you again, committee, for having me. This evening, our afternoon, with the time I have allotted with you, I want to make sure we have a chance to talk with the customer feedback experience. As Ms. Anderson mentioned, MTM, we're the quality assurance contractor for Metro Access Services. What we strive to do, and what we do really is provide independent, non-biased, customer feedback investigation, and in our best efforts, we try to improve the service through understanding your customer experience. So we really try to hear your voice. We do provide positives and negatives, and we try to build trends that can be given directly back to Metro Access leadership so they can make improvements where needed and can give accommodations where needed as well. For that, I do want to take the time to ask to help you understand a little bit about the process you step through with regard to when you do call in or do submit feedback through the web, how that information gets to us and what actually occurs to complete an investigation. So ideally, you know, our work day really begins from a customer feedback investigation standpoint once we receive that feedback from Metro Customer Service, the same group that handles bus and rail. In the end, once they provide that information to us, we use a multi-stage process to really build a foundation and try to build understanding of what occurred for the trip in question for the customer, as well as if there's any other thing that might come up. From our standpoint, we start with just using systems like Trapeze, which would have the itinerary, which would have the schedule for the driver, which would have the customer's information, verifying that information, understanding more about the trip itself, the details of where the pickup location may be. And we use that information to build foundations to where we can bring in more information to systems that we have. For example, we use the GPS information for the vehicle to understand the location of a vehicle. We use Google Maps to verify that the address or the description of the entrance or the pickup area matches to what's in our system. So when there is a discussion or a complaint that says that they weren't at the pickup entrance, we use what was described and was notated in Trapeze by the customer and compare it against Google Maps and then the street view. We continue to bring in further information we continue to bring further information for the trip itself and for the customer through reviewing the calls that the customer may have made from the reservation standpoint to where's my ride to our calls that may have come from to the dispatcher just to inquire about the time of things. So with that, we review it. We try to understand if there's information within that call that might help us get a better story or a better understanding of what you as a customer actually experienced to paint a fuller picture. Once we dive further into that standpoint and we review the calls, review the trip manifest, we review really the location of the vehicle, it goes back to what's the policy. So just like you would reference the customer guide, we use the customer guide in any policy or understanding that will give a broader sense of if something was not done correctly or how something should have been performed for the customer itself. And as we continue to piece everything together from our standpoint, once we as MTM put it all together, we try to make sure that everyone involved, from the providers that provided the trip that day, the operator themselves, and also we try to bring the voice in of the reservation agent, the dispatcher, their managers, anyone that you might have interacted with. We bring all that in from reaching out to the providers. But we do all of this within a time period too, within a required time period. So within 5 business days from receiving the complaint or the feedback from you, we start this process and we step through it, asking questions along the way, hoping to really get a sense, again, of what may have occurred or what you may have experienced, because their feedback helps us, again, to make some progress for me. And then once we piece it all together, before we can close the case, before we can, consider that this is something that should be investigated, the most important part is reaching out to you, our customers. We call each customer, we let them know what we found, We try to educate where possible with regards to the policies that are in place about metro access. And we, you know, we don't treat investigations like there's, these are all the same. If there's a complaint of vehicles being late, every case is treated individually as if they're all different, because they are. There are different situations and scenarios that come up that we see from the systems that we have in place, from the feedback that you provide as a customer, that really helps us understand, you know, that we have to ask other questions. We have to look beyond the obvious at times. So in doing that, again, after the fifth business day, the hope is that we've done everything. And if it's not the fifth business day, we just want to make sure that we've done our due diligence. We've found everything we need to find. And once we do that, we call you and let you know what we've done. And we try to provide that closure from that end. So that's really the interaction with the customer, really making sure that, again, you understand that if you don't just hold it and do nothing with it. So further emphasize what actually occurs too, from our standpoint as MCM, we realize we offer their role with quality assurance. Providers themselves, they play a role in giving us their understanding of what occurred during the transaction. So we are, and this is probably led by the Metro Access leadership, they provide for us an avenue to get feedback on the quality of our work. This is the customer feedback review panel in which the investigation we conduct are individually looked at, reviewed. We walk through them in detail. We try to understand what the investigators for MCM have done correctly, what areas that they could have improved on, if anything was not as done as in detail, because we're not perfect, but we are moving in the right direction. And it also serves as a benefit for the whole operation, given that the attendees in place there are all the providers, their leadership, their management. So it's a good 360 feedback review for everyone involved. We try to use that area as well as to where, as I'll discuss here in a few about the trends that we see, to truly understand if there's other areas to make a positive impact on the service. And just kind of going forward, in front of you, you have a packet. Every month, we come before you, Metro Access provides a packet, and in that it describes what customers have provided public comment within the meeting. Well, anytime there's a public comment, positive or otherwise, you know, we as MCM, along with Metro Access staff, we try to contact the person while they're here in the meeting. We try to understand what it is that occurred during that trip, and then we go back and we take that same process that I described to you previously with all the systems, with all the information gathering, with getting everyone involved, and we apply that to the feedback received. And at the end of that, Jim Weber, who's sitting to the right of me, reached out to every single person to share with them, again, the findings, if there was other aspects that went along with, not just that on that single trip, or maybe throughout their history of time on Metro Access. And in any case, we review that history as well, too. So, but we won't say, and sit in front of you and say, you know, things have been completed, or the investigation has been completed, those are the steps that we take through. So just with regard to some of the trends that we have seen over a recent quarter, for the top complaints, with regard to the top complaint categories that we've seen from customers overall, the top three in order are late complaints, where the vehicle is being perceived as being late. Then there are complaints about the excessive onboard time, and basically a complaint of that nature, where if you've been on the vehicle, or you feel that you've been on the vehicle too long for your trip. And then the third one is a vehicle no-show complaint, which basically says that we as an operation didn't perform the process that we have in place to issue a no-show for a customer. So those were the feedback types would have been, again, excessive onboard time as number one, followed by driver conduct feedback. And then finally, accommodations. We do have private folks that do come to the meeting and say some very positive things about operators and about the session, our operational controls, et cetera, as well. So, but that's really the end of, just speaking with y'all. Thank you for the opportunity. I do want to say we do appreciate the feedback because it does provide light from you directly exactly what's happening with operations.
All right, thank you so much. Any committee members that want to have comment on this topic here? I see Charlie. Anyone else? I see Denise. I see Philippa. Darnies. Just writing down names. Anyone else before we begin? Okay, we will start with Charlie. Charlie followed by Denise.
What?
Oh, first Charlie followed by Denise, then Philippa.
Okay. Yeah, I'm Charlie Crawford.
Introduce yourself.
So Charlie Crawford from Montgomery County.
Thank you.
I'm sorry for walking in late, but we arrived late. The reason I wanted to ask the question because this deals with the investigations of people's complaints, and I have to say, and I just completed probably the worst Metro Access ride I've ever had. It was, the air conditioning barely worked. And I don't know if you noticed the temperature out there, but it's pretty hot.
93,
thank you. It's also true that when a dog is exposed to temperatures over 100 degrees, they can die. And I was worried that my dog might die. I was very upset. And Ms. Williams, I think, is in the audience. She was here. She was on the same van as me. And so she's testimony that we arrived alive anyway. But I got to tell you that that's unacceptable. And is there some policy that you have that ensures that a Metro Access van doesn't leave unless it's properly air conditioned? Nobody should have to do that. Thank you.
First of all, the answer to your direct question, is there such a policy? The answer is yes. They are not to leave the lot ever, even if it was January, without both the heat and the air conditioning systems in fully functional order. That said, there is a tad of a challenge when you look at the size of the Metro Access doors when they're open and your dwell time. It does take a little bit of time to recover. Do you have the vehicle number handy? Or I can research it if not.
No, but Tony would know it because he was...
That's fine. We'll get it and we will certainly have that checked tonight.
Thank you. Next is Denise.
The complaint line, when you call and you've done the investigation, the person generally calls you and says, sorry for the inconvenience, and they're very polite, but I don't know, it's not a good answer. When you, I'm just sorry for the inconvenience, and what you said is true. Are you understanding what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I guess that's a script or something, but it's not satisfying. When you get that call, and then they put their name and number, and you can call them, send them a message. But I guess they have a lot of complaints, and they got to move on. But that reply or that script is not soothing.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rush. If you want to,
I don't care. Okay, so this is Jen. We're always looking for ways to improve the customer's experience during that follow-up call. We know that that really can kind of be a make it or break it, wrap up, for the whole experience, I guess. But there's also limitations. Obviously, we aren't able to talk about a lot of really internal corrective action that was taken for that operator or dispatcher, you know, based on their personnel files. So they're pretty limited in what they can share insofar as, like, that sort of thing. But I think the biggest part of the customer feedback where it really brings the most value is probably where you're looking more at that trending that Carlton was talking about. So, and that wouldn't really be as much reflected, I guess, in the follow-up call.
But I do understand what you're saying. I don't want to push it off as, you know, that's something that we can't receive as a positive feedback for us to improve on. It's not something that we have as a script. Ideally, the only part that's a script is saying that this is the call that may be recorded for the purpose of quality assurance purposes, and then from that point, we really try to make sure that you understand that we, again, did our process and we understood your experience from piecing it together, but also from what you've given us. And if there has been an occasion where you felt like you guys didn't really get a sense that either, you know, we really were on your side or we were doing what we needed to do, we did not apologize for that. But that's definitely something that we'll take from here and work through.
Thank you. Next person is Philippa.
Mr. Chairman, the member from Washington, D.C. yields her time to the other member from Washington, D.C. I was merely signaling that she had something to say.
Oh, sorry. Darnice. Nobody else. Go ahead. And then I have a customer comment card here. And I see.
I would like to follow up on what Ms. Rush said in terms of the vehicle no-show. What I find to be true is there's a lot of inconsistency when it comes to the no-show, and I don't know if it's based on the fact that they stay, you know, that the driver has a half an hour and you have like 5 minutes. Most of the time the driver doesn't adhere to the 5 minutes, but then sometimes they do, and it's kind of inconsistent because I've been no-show for the 5 minutes, but then other times I haven't been no-show for 15 minutes. So. But when you are no-show, then you call and to let them know, even though sometimes it's difficult to get right back in and you're still within your window time. Then when they, when the driver says, we're, you know, they're being very polite and they're sorry about that, and then they ask you if you want your evening trip and all of that, you feel a little disgusted. I think they do diffuse you a little bit when they're just so nice. But it doesn't help you get to work.
Just to add a little context to that, when that does occur, the other aspect, and I think the committee is fully aware, is that each no-show is reviewed by a no-show team. And we have a process that we step through to ensure that while you may feel that, you know, you've done everything in your power and just really on the operator, they didn't follow the policy. We use the systems in place to review each no-show, and they do show that at times that, you know, if the operator didn't do the correct thing, we do notify the provider and let them know that in the past one that hasn't performed according to policy, and that is not held against the customer. It's just something that we as a quality assurance team provide to ensure that, again, all aspects of the service are in place.
Can I ask one thing? How rigid is the no-show policy? Because sometimes you're in a vehicle, they rush you out, and then you have to wait for the next person that's boarding the vehicle for an excessively long time, or it's not their time to come out, and things like that. So how often do you review those issues like that?
Well, again, if you want to ask,
Yeah, I can speak to that. Again, as Mr. Brown stated, every no-show is examined, and we are looking for just those very things where the no-show policy has not been followed in its entirety, and that means from the operator waiting the applicable time for the customer to present themselves, for the dispatch agent to call all the applicable numbers in an effort to try to reach the customer before issuing a no-show, that the dispatch agent put into Trapeze the required notes relative to the location description, and getting the information from the operator that the operator did in fact do door-to-door. There's a whole extensive process that is to be followed each and every time. There is no wiggle room insofar as an operator or dispatch agent or anybody else on the Metro Access side involved taking another route, if you will, or doing another process. We have a firm process that is to be followed, and the whole point of MTM as the independent QA is to examine that and to report back to Metro Access leadership personnel where they found trends of them not following the no-show policy, so that those individuals can be coached and counseled to make sure that they understand what the policy is and they are following that policy each and every time.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Ms. Anderson, it seems like the system is in a catch-22, the drivers and the schedulers or dispatchers. If I have a window of 3:15 to 3:45, they come at 3:15 and they call, I come down, and my time starts. So they're going around the corner to 21st and K, and I get on the bus at 3:20. 3:25, we're at 21st and K. The next person's window doesn't start till 3:45 or 3:50. So you're sitting on the bus waiting 20 minutes or 15 minutes, for sometimes 30 minutes. But everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing. But you're on the bus for 20 minutes when you could almost be home. That's happening a lot. Is that happening with other people?
Yes.
Yeah, we spend a lot of time, and it's not anybody, it's like a catch-22 with the scheduling.
So let me make sure I'm understanding your comment correctly. So are you stating that, say, once in the example that you gave, once they do the pickup, once they pick you up, that it seems like maybe the operator is getting to the next location earlier than what the schedule had allotted, and therefore you are there waiting until that window opens?
Right, because that person's window doesn't even start till 3:45. So I have to sit there, or it just so happens it's me, but the person has to sit there and wait. A large instance, my pickup was 3:30, and he picked up a lady, I guess, somewhere, and they got there at 3:10. My pickup window's not till 3:30, so they sit out there 20 minutes, or if my window, pickup window isn't at 3:45, they're sitting out there all that time.
Well, I can say this, that clearly with our service and the large service area and terrain that we have to traverse, that it is not always going to be picture perfect, that there are going to be times when, for instance, a vehicle may get to a destination quicker than anticipated by the scheduling parameters used, and that you know, if the committee is saying that they are seeing this crop up more often, that we can certainly go and look at our system to see if we do have anything insofar as the parameters set up that may be causing that. But I would be remiss to say that it can't, you know, it's not ever going to happen. It is going to happen because there are, you know, traffic and other things that may be bad one day and great the next, and that we can't really forecast down to, you know, the minute dust particle. But if in fact the committee is saying that they're starting to see this happening more often than not, we will certainly go back and look at this.
How many minutes do you think is reasonable to be sitting on the vehicle waiting for the next pickup? 20 minutes? 25? 30?
Again, I think this was brought up a couple of months ago with Ms. Bush in a situation she had, and I made the comment then that I think in her case she was waiting about 30 minutes. I think that is excessive. 30 minutes is definitely excessive. But again, we have to look at the situation. Again, as Mr. Brown stated, it's not always cookie cutter. And so I'm not going to necessarily say that, you know, 15 minutes or else or anything like that. But I can definitively say that 30 minutes is excessive.
All right. Thank you. We need to move on. Tappan, and then followed by Marissa.
Yeah, I got a question on this. Maybe one of you can answer this. You receive complaints like here, customers saying, coming to a meeting and giving a complaint, and then you try to answer. I see a report here. Okay. But you also receive complaint through internet, and you also receive complaint through telephone. Now my question is this: how do you respond your complaints through the internet and through the telephone? How did you handle that situation, and how many do you receive per month, and how many staff you have to do that job? Because I know my complaint through internet was never answered, so I gave up. So I'm just wondering, where does it go? There's a black hole somewhere up there, does it hide someplace? I don't know. Just a question I want to ask. Could somebody answer that?
I can feel that.
Okay.
As it relates to either letters or emails that are received, say for instance, you just stated you sent the email to from WMATA.com. Okay. So those emails go directly to WMATA customer service, which again is a WMATA, the same WMATA intake group that does the intake for bus and rail. And that is separate from MTM. So once they get those emails actually, they have to print out and then re-input those manually into the trapeze COM system. That is the system that is the housing mechanism for the customer feedbacks we receive. Now, recently, here over the last, actually, couple of weeks, the WMATA customer service team did a pretty major upgrade to their feedback intake system. So right now at this time, I cannot tell you if now, instead of doing that manual process of receiving the email, having to print it out, and then retype it into our system, that now may be a situation where it's automatically transferred. I can certainly follow up on that and give you an answer there, because this was a pretty big deal for that group. But if that feedback is in our COM system, then it is readily available for MTM to then get that information and start the investigation process. So if you have a date where you did submit a customer feedback, I would really like for you to give me that information so I can follow up there, because we're relying on that group to put that information into the system so we can conduct the proper investigation.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up very quickly, I'm talking about people with disabilities. Well, you said the customer is everybody. So there is no such system that I can go directly to your office and send the internet through my email. They complain, somebody, me or somebody else, and it goes directly to the system of AAC committee or somewhere it goes, or to the chairman that they could ask in these meetings, rather than waiting to go to a general box, then they take 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, I don't know what the time there, then it will come to you, then you will take 4 months, then give it to the review, Mr. Brown. It's just not very good system.
Well, there's a reason for that, and what that's called is a separation of duties, almost like an internal control mechanism, because one thing that you want to steer clear from is having the same entity who investigates the reports also be the intake, because that could be an internal control issue. Say, what if the person's doing the intake or the investigations weren't on the up and up? They could, you know, say, hey, I never got it. But if you have a separate entity that's doing the intake, and then you have a separate entity that's doing the investigation, then you have a separation of duties so that hopefully you have more of an internal control factor than if you had the same people that operated the service, taking the complaints, doing the investigations. There's not really any internal control under that framework. And you know what that means, so.
All right. Quick question. Did you get any confirmation when you sent that email, when you went through the WMATA email?
No, I got nothing. It's working blackboard.
Okay.
And I began writing because
I went through the webnet, WMATA.com, and some 102-year site, something, special office for complaint. I have no idea where it goes. And I think this was reported today in Washington Post, by the way. And Iraq has the same thing, complaint. Iraq did that, and it was written. And Mr. Bowersox at that time was handling this, am I correct?
Oh,
yeah, okay, son, okay. And so it was a big article in Washington Post, I read also. So now I know what happens there. Anyway, I think bureaucracy is still too complicated too. I'm talking for people with disabilities, like me and people.
Well, certainly, customers can call in to WMATA Customer Service and give their verbal feedback, and then and that agent they talk with documents their feedback, and then that again gets passed on to MTM.
All right, Marissa, and then we need to put closure to this.
I just want the community to know if you only have a vehicle in particular and there's an issue, either we realize that you're going to be on a vehicle for an extreme period of time, 30 minutes or more. If you have a cell phone with you, you do have the ability to call in as the supervisor. And if nothing else, have them looking at real time, because not always, but sometimes, if you need to get attention real time, and you have an appointment time, and that's when they can have some, not always, but sometimes they can realize the mistake and move it. But, I mean, it does take some extra work on your part, and if you're ever on a vehicle and you realize something's not working right, and you have a cell phone, in particular, if you have a cell phone, you have the ability to call in extra supervisor and do that, because if they get it real time, it's more quickly gonna be able to be taken care of.
Thank you. Thank you for the comment. Okay, now I have a customer comment here. It says, is your office responsible to lessen the long distance inserts, add-ons, and or writing clients for hours past their drop-off, their drop-off location or their home? And then the follow-up to that is, I forgot the question for someone's office. If they are making a change to improve, when will we see the change? Do you have a deadline?
Okay, I guess the first question, and I just want to make sure I understand the question correctly.
Yes, yeah, so is your office responsible to lessen the long distance insert / add-on trips, I guess, and or metro access trips, and or writing the clients for hours past their dropouts or drop off location or I guess home.
I guess in response to that, when it says, again, from what we do, we write policies, we build and investigate. When we identify that these incidents occur, our job is to provide the trends. And if we see it, we blow this up to where, again, Metro Access, the leadership and the governance, across the providers to make the decision to make the change needed for them. In our part, I would say that if we do see that a customer may state in their complaint that this continually happens, we do look at their trip history, and we'll go as far back as needed to identify, you know, is this a consistent trend that this one particular person is experiencing, and if we find that, we let all parties involved know that we need to recalibrate for this particular person because, again, something's not meshing correctly, whether it's from the scheduling of the scheduling that's being built or from the time that they make their reservation or if their information is incorrect. So, but we're personally responsible in changing that. We're not, but we do it through feedback and provide that insight to the Metro Access leadership. And then the second question was with regard to the deadline.
Yes?
The deadline for making the changes.
I guess, do you have a deadline if you're trying to improve, I guess, maybe changes in customer service experience?
Right. So, as described, through this customer feedback review panel, we do this, we have this every 3 weeks. We don't have a process that allows us to stay complacent at all. There's something that's not working in the process of how feedback is handled from any perspective, from the provider, from ourselves. Every 3 weeks we review that. Now, during that discussion, again, because we correct how that process works, in discussion in real time, what's actually been experienced by our customers, again, we can walk out of that meeting with action items that says, you know, if this is what we need to change, we should try this. We should try to analyze it closer, and that's something that comes away from it. So it doesn't mean that we change it immediately, not necessarily. We just want to make sure that whatever is being recommended to Metro Access leadership, whether it's from MTM or from the provider, is actually going to provide that impact. So sometimes that takes additional understanding.
All right. Thank you so much. So any other feedback on this topic before we move on from committee members? As it relates to this topic, seeing none, we thank you for coming and explaining the process to us. We look forward to you again in the future, because I have a feeling they'll probably be requesting our work plan to have a visit or a review from y'all at least once a year to see what's going on in trends and how things have improved with your department and serving our customers. Thank you. Next is the Q&A from the May 2016 OCC tour by the ACC. So this is with committee members. Any observations or concerns that you saw with the tour at the call center that you would like to express at this time?
The food was good.
All right.
Okay.
All right. So to give a description of last month, the Accessibility Advisory Committee members got a tour of the Metro Access Call Center, and we got to see real time some of the departments and their functions. First, we did reservations because they closed at 4:30. So we got to see a little bit of real time process and action of them interacting with customers on the phone, and we had staff, you know, guide us through, you know, what should be happening and what we were seeing. We also got to go through, see what scheduling does, that area, and dispatch, how, you know, there is a check and balance system in place, you know, with all these operations going on with supervisors, you know, and other departments. We even, you know, saw there was a team, you know, working on no-shows. There's a team working on, you know, drivers and lunch breaks, all in this space. And we also saw real life sort of statistics of calls coming in to the queue, how many, how long they're handled. So all these statistics on screen, so they can be managed appropriately by multiple groups of people. Did I give a pretty good description, or did you want anything else that I missed, Ms. Anderson?
You handled it perfectly.
Okay, given that background, for those who are there, any comments or feedbacks or concerns about the call center tour? Charlie is first up.
Okay. This time I want to be positive. The last comment was a bit patriotic, but that's the way it was. I want to say that I was very impressed with the operation, the amount of people, the busyness that they were involved in, and the professionalism they exercised during the course of their duties. And as one who uses them fairly often to make reservations for Metro Access trips, my hat's off to them. They do a good job. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
The food was good.
I'll go through committee members here. Since Darnice, do you have any comments? I just want to make sure I get everyone's feedback, that their voice is heard, particularly on this.
I agree with the professionalism, and it was very impressive, the number of calls that they actually received and how well it was timed and how well they reacted to the calls. and how courteous and professional the staff was, because it's almost like they're in a little pressure cooker in a way. And so it was nice to see how professional and how people carry themselves very well. Thanks.
Philippa, if I'm saying it correctly, please correct me.
You always say my name twice. Philippa.
Philippa.
And once wrong. Anyway, I thought it was a very interesting and enlightening tour. I don't really use the service, but I just sort of pictured it as a bunch of people in a room, and whatever phone call comes up goes to someone, no matter what the issue was. So the division of duties I thought was interesting, that some plan the trip, some do the follow-up or whatever if your ride is late and so forth. So I thought that was very organized and efficient and nice-looking facility. And if the people weren't happy, they didn't show it to us. So.
All right. Bill, were you there?
Yes,
I was. If you comment.
Well, I'd like to reiterate all the same lots of comments. The OCC does a really good job.
That is not
true. But I do want to point out that when I've been motivated yesterday, I had a Mr. Red experience that did not go so well. And it put me something that I see Mr. Wyness differently, and it's something that I think the call center handles pretty well. And I think the larger learning lesson could be experienced, which is because Vermont is so big, because the operations that they do are so big, things are segmented, we look at them, which is great. But for the consumer, for the customer, we're not so interested in the segments. We're interested in the overall process. We want a ride. The same, we don't want to have to think about or deal with how it's turned off, how many people deal with it all along the way, and how many other folks have to be involved. However, I think oftentimes all of Ramada, and then I think it, what we saw the last time at the meeting, the operation we saw last time was doing a good job of it. Although in this big trip time yesterday, I realized that it involved a shuttle between train stations that were down on schedule. The elevator was down scheduled at an elevator, and it was taking shuttle to there. And it took me over an hour in one direction, about 45 minutes in the other direction. And what I was there to evaluate were the jobs of the call center and the search manager. And they both did a fine job, but the whole thing did not work. So that brings me to the point that the survey, which is that there's so many people involved in it, but it seems that the overall process does not work. And that is the main goal. That's what we're all trying to do. And I think it's extremely difficult. I'm just bringing it up because I don't know the answer. But it is difficult because there are reasons why so many people have to do it, and there are reasons why they have to agree to work as a team, and there are ways for doing that, but it's just not working out that way. And all the things that we go over, like all the customer reports and the complaints, they're all complaints about the overall mission, but they're targeted wrongly in a lot of cases at one of the million people involved in them. And because there's so many people involved in it, it gets very confusing where the mistake is. And a lot of times, people involved in the process are very quick to say, it is not our fault, it is their fault. And they say, it is not our fault, it is their fault. And before you knew it, nobody's saying it's our fault, everybody saying it's their fault, and the problems are still there.
Right.
And unfortunately, that's history, an experience that we've all had.
Right.
And that is an experience that we would like to find a way to overcome.
Thank you.
And I'm just pointing that again.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, Denise, your experience with the tour? Because I'm just going to everyone.
That was my first time ever being to the call center in the 17 years that I've rode. What I did notice, and I appreciate that a lot of the people who are dispatching or working in the call center used to be my drivers. And it's good to know that if the driving experience or whatever, there was room for them to still be in the system because they knew how to the system is supposed to operate, and they found another position, you know, in the call center or dispatch or different from driving. And I was glad to see that. And I've never seen any of the drivers, but I know the voices when I called in, but that used to be my driver or, you know, someone that I'm familiar with. And it's good to know that if you can't drive for whatever reason, there is another position for you to move up and stay within the system because you know how it's supposed to operate.
Thank you. Ms. Belden, you were there. You can give very briefly your sort of assessment of the call center tour. Briefly.
There's not much I can say because, you know, I was there for 6 years.
Yes.
But I do want to say that I was very surprised with a new little feature they had where they could tell where every van was. And I was amazed by the way they can look at it, little red dots, where they can tell. That was something new that wasn't there when I was there. But my only concern is that I would like to see I don't think any of us could see that a dispatcher being more proactive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's about it. Because they have everything there. Ramada has put everything there for dispatchers and reservations. What I want to see is that human error to be more proactive. You're looking and you can see that a driver's late. You know, hand out. Put your hand out and find out why. And I don't mean a confrontation or anything. I mean there could be something very simple, an accident on the street that could cause a driver to be backed up. And so I think there are a lot of things that they have given since I left the call center, but they still have to get that human, that sensitivity of human thing, which I'm sure Ramada has, but I'm just concerned whether the dispatchers have. But it was...
Thank you. Ed, do you have any feedback? Were you at the call center tour?
Did you go to call
tour?
Center?
Yeah.
Right, did you have any feedback to give about the tour, then Marissa, and then we'll move on from there?
No, I mean, I second a lot of things they're talking about as far as the professionalism and so forth. But there was one thing I was wondering, and I never got it, never got into any discussion with it, but, and that is, a lot of times I schedule a trip by appointment, and every time I do, it turns into an hour and a half to 2 hours earlier pickup. And generally I think, well, somebody else is scheduled to be picked up. A lot of times they're not. And I get to my destination 2 hours early sometimes. And I guess I just didn't understand that really, but you know, I don't know if it's a product of the volume that Metro Access is handling right now, but that's primarily what I probably would have liked that question answered when I was there, but that's about it.
All right. Marissa? Or was that? Ms. Anderson, did you want to respond? You want Marissa to finish, and then you can respond to...
Marissa can go ahead and finish in her office.
Marissa, your perspectives of the tour, what you see that went good, or you know, feedback that you can offer?
I really like the tour because it made me able to put a face with people that I come to talk to. I think it also gave them an opportunity to see me, and so that was nice, and it was just really nice to see, because I have been looking up to be there before, so it was nice to see the added features.
Thank you. Ms. Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Stemmerford. Mr. McGinty, to respond to your question regarding appointment time. Typically, when you, I'm assuming you're calling in to do a demand trip and requesting an appointment time at the time of reservation, and that request is also coupled with the obvious requests for that day for the demand trips, along with the subscription trips that we have. And so that night before, scheduling is working feverishly to ensure that your appointment time request is being honored. Now, on the day of service, obviously there could be scheduling or changes that take place, whether it be cancellations or whatnot, or maybe your particular trip had to be moved, maybe say to another route that could accommodate better due to other changes happening. That may entail you arriving at your location earlier than what you expected. But I will say this, if you are finding that this is, you're going to a particular location and this is happening on a consistent basis, we would be glad to look at that and see what's happening, because I would not expect that to be the case on a consistent basis, so I would be happy to talk with you about that and get that information so we can take a look into it and see if we can correct that for you. All right, thank you.
And I guess I will end this conversation with a positive note. What I've seen from the tour was a lot of the sort of building of the professionalism of the staff, sort of the positive affirmations y'all had there that was very welcoming to see. We hope that continues. We hope that's interweaved very tightly, giving past history of customer, where's my ride staff interaction, to see that sort of human relations piece or interpersonal skills being improved. Concern was, and this relates to a trip which you probably know well about, was, okay, after having this tour to see how everything works, and then to have a trip at night where I was no-showed an hour earlier, and then they did not catch it until I called at the end of my window, and a vehicle doesn't arrive 90 minutes later. I know y'all addressed it, but to see how all that happened and then this happens, I'm like, okay. I know it's probably hopefully a rare fluke that does not happen again, operationally.
Well, thank you. If I may answer a couple of things, Mr. Summerford, I appreciate the feedback on that. The positive aspect of your trip that night was, for the first time, the dispatcher came to us and admitted the mistake. Immediately came up and said, I made a mistake. That was a level of professionalism that we had not seen before. Instead of saying someone else did it, the dispatcher afterwards came back and said,
the whole thing on the driver. Okay.
No, the dispatcher completely said, this was my mistake. The vehicle was there early. And then she put it up through the chain of command. And I greatly appreciated that. Even though she made a mistake, she freely admitted it and looked for a resolution,
which is a major improvement.
And that's very positive. In regards to the appointment time, I do agree. sometimes with the system, and especially on busy days, the system is going to look for the best solution that it can, especially during rush hour time. So it may take an hour, it may take an hour and a half as it's looking for that appointment time. Some days, as Ms. Anderson was saying, I might have cancellations. I may have some a little bit more freedom on a route, and it does get you there early. We do strive to do our best with that, but we are cognizant of the problem. Lastly, I do want to thank everyone very much for coming to the call center, and I am very appreciative of the fact that we are perceived as being more professional, and that's really what we're striving for. I'm very proud of our team. We have a long way to go, but I'm glad we're starting to make strides.
And I would like to say, if the rest of the committee probably can, will piggyback on this, we hope that this tour becomes a yearly thing on our work plan, as I look at B, that we visit the call center. Because this is the first of its kind that we kind of did as a team. So we hope this continues on a yearly basis. We would like to come back as an agency.
We would welcome that, Mr. Summerford, and I do want to follow up that the one reservationist that was picked out by Marissa, Ron A. Bryant, as soon as the interaction happened, we actually bought her lunch because that was the positive interaction we want to have all the time with our clients.
All right. Okay, thank you so much on that topic. Now, Ms. Rush, you had an update on the Billy's ride, and I'm looking at Mr. Kent, since I was informed you can't answer such questions. So go ahead, Ms. Rush, with your question.
I don't really have a question. I want to know what's the update. Where are we? What do we expect? You know.
And then following that, we'll get into customer comment period.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair. You know, people ask me all the time, what is it like to work at Metro in your particular role? And I always tell them, I say, all you need to do is listen in to any one of the three AAC meetings that occur each month, and you hear staff talking directly to customers, and that's what the job is like, and I think that's the right way to do it. We have had a lot of discussion about Abilities Ride. Where it is right now is that we have taken the input that you all have provided us, and we have had I guess you could call it a kickoff meeting with our procurement group, because what they do is they take the description of what's called the scope of work, is what we were talking to you about, which is the little part of the RFP that says what services Metro wants, and they take that and they put it into a larger document, the RFP, with all of, you know, for lack of a better word, legalese, and, you know, all the rules and regulations and policies of Metro that apply to it. And it goes through a cycle of approval between the procurement office, our legal counsel, and once that process is complete, then the general manager is going to have an opportunity to take a look at it. Now, one of the reasons why we haven't said any more about what the final document is going to look like is because, as you could probably guess, if the general manager hasn't seen it yet, then we can't call it final. I think that the thing that we intend to do that's most important to the AAC is that when we do meet with the general manager to offer the staff recommendation, we are also going to share with him what the AAC's position is on the issues that have been raised. And I think that's important. We've done it that way in the past so that he knows that if we recommend something that is different from what this committee has said, he can expect that he'll hear about it again, that the board will also hear about it again. So it's important for the general manager to know that. On the other hand, he also wants to know if the staff feels that, you know, there's anything from the suggestions we've received that you know, we have our own reasons why we think something different should be done. So it's still kind of in a discussion phase. What I will tell you is that we planned to reiterate to the general manager that the hot button issues we heard from this committee were things like the availability of wheelchair accessible vehicles, the ability to use the service by phone and not just by internet. We also heard, you know, concerns about insurance, concerns about driver training, background checks, and a general recognition of the rights of customers under the ADA. And all of these things, you know, I can just assure you, the staff heard the committee loud and clear that we're going to have to be prepared to speak to all those points. One thing I will tell you is that the timeline to put the RFP out is taking a little bit longer than what we originally had thought, because the procurement office has a lot of responsibilities right now under SafeTrack to make sure that you know, the work on the rail system, these repairs, this intense schedule of repairs is met. And so, you know, this RFP, while it's important and it's really an investment, I think, in the future of Metro Access and our relationship with the disability community, but it's certainly not a higher priority than the safety issues that are being addressed on the rail right now. So we kind of have to wait in line for the groups that evaluate these documents to finish some of their more urgent work. So I do think, though, that we will still be seeing something toward the end of the summer. It's not going to be delayed very long, but it might be delayed a month or two longer than what we originally expected for that reason. But all of the issues that the committee has talked to us about, the things that have been said during public comment at the board meetings, you know, as well as all the input that we received through the RFI process, which, by the way, you know, that... I know that many people are used to giving their opinion by coming to the mic during a meeting, but I have to tell you, the RFI process was particularly effective because there were some organizations that got to make a very specific business case. And, you know, it's sometimes, even though people can come forward and make a verbal comment, you know, those proposals and those written arguments, you know, once you write them down, they don't go away. They're not going to be forgotten. So I think, you know, we got a lot of good information, detailed business arguments for why Metro should go one way versus another. In the meantime, there are some other activities going on that are related to this. That I don't know if you all were aware that there is an RFQ document that is coming out or that has come out in the District of Columbia from DDOT, District of Columbia government, where they are asking for interested consultants to come forward and give them advice on how transportation services can be coordinated in the district. So in other words, beyond Transport DC, what else can be done? So they're asking the same kinds of questions. What they're doing, though, is they are actually, in an RFQ is a request for qualifications. So it's, you know, each one of these RF somethings is a request for something, right? RFI is a request for information. Tell us about yourself. An RFQ is a request for qualifications. Tell us about yourself and why you're knowledgeable in a particular line of business. RFP, request for a proposal. Tell us, if we award you a contract, how you'll do it. So the district is doing this RFQ, and they're looking for a consultant to come in and say, all right, with all of the various types of specialized transportation in the district, how might we leverage these different resources to give district residents with disabilities better options. So I think the, you know, the thing that makes me happy hearing that is that it sounds like after all the discussion we've had on the subject for the last several years, that the jurisdictions are really taking to heart that the demand for this type of service isn't going away, that it's increasing, and that regardless of what anyone's opinion might be of Metro Access on a particular day, the one fact about us is that we're the largest and we're the most expensive. And we can't be the only place for people to turn, because eventually we're gonna burst at the seams, whether, you know, financially or otherwise. Now, legally, Metro has to provide whatever service is requested by the public. But when we end up spending more money on paratransit service than we do, in some cases, for the rail, you say, well, is that really the most effective way to serve the public? So that's why they're all starting to ask these questions. Maryland is really looking for WMATA to come up with a solution. They feel that, you know, they're paying us for these services and they'd like to see us take a more active role, which is what Abilities Ride is supposed to be. It's a pilot that starts in just Maryland. And if it's successful, it could grow to operate in other parts of the region. The district has already had great success with Transport DC, and now they're going to ask for a consultant to come in and identify other possible ways to serve the public better. Meanwhile, Virginia, and those of you who represent Virginia on the committee here know, Virginia did a lot of these things some time ago. That doesn't mean they're not interested in doing more, but I think, you know, Arlington Star is there, FastTran is there, Dr. Tappan Banerjee Bus Service is there, and he has some brochures for you that he's going to pass out at the end of the meeting. But the truth is that Virginia probably does have some of the best examples of cross-utilization of funds and resources to serve the public in the disability community. So Maryland and D.C. have actually asked several times, you know, well, tell, you know, the folks in Virginia, what are you doing? How are you doing it? You know, is there something, you know, from the example that we can follow? So if Dr. Posner is listening this evening, I'm sure he's smiling wherever he is. But that's the update that we have for you this evening. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I had one. This is Pat Sheehan, AAC Chair. It was discussed, I think, by the committee, and there was a request put forward that the committee be able to take a look at the scope of work before it goes into the RFP. Is that going to be possible?
That is a question that has to be posed to procurement. I can tell you that my gut feeling is that that's going to be difficult to accommodate. And I'm going to tell you why. Because I know that people will be interested to know why. It's one thing for us to tell you the ideas that are in the proposal, the types of things that Metro intends to ask for, but procurement is very sensitive to people seeing versions of the actual document, because what happens is then it becomes more subjective as to on what day and what time was the same document made viewable by everybody. So what will happen is, I mean, I'll give you an example. You know, let's say that a company in Pennsylvania wants to bid on this, and we discuss the contents or a draft of the scope of work at one of our meetings. The local people who are familiar with us, who could come over to the meeting, or who know the way this committee works well enough to know to get on the speaker, could listen in and start learning and preparing for the bid before a company that doesn't know all of the ins and outs of how we do business here, and they might be considered to have a competitive advantage. So to be absolutely precise and sure, that everybody sees it at the same time. None of the versions of the document are supposed to be released outside of the team that's working on it, really, to anybody. So, you know, what I would say is that I think if the committee's interest is to say, all right, before you put this document out, does it say what we ask you to put in there? I think that's a fair question. I think we could come back and I think we could answer your questions about that sort of thing. But it would also have to be very close to, if not concurrent with, the release of the document. So it's because, again, you know, what will happen is that if a company comes in and they say that they didn't have, if they didn't all get to look at the document at the same time, then, you know, the award could be questioned and then nobody wins the contract and then we have to start all over again.
Excuse me. All along we've been asking for that, and now when we first asked, why didn't you say what you just said? Because now, you know, all along we've been thinking we're going to see something that we're not going to see.
Well, Ms. Rush, you know, I think that before I just tell you early on in the discussion that we're not going to be able to come and have the committee approve the final document, I didn't know at that time whether or not the committee would be satisfied with the other thing that we offered, which was simply to confirm whether or not certain recommendations of the committee went in there. It's not really something that I speak to until I get clarification from procurement. So the first time that the committee asked this question, I had some doubts about whether it would be allowed, but I went back and asked before I gave you a formal answer.
I don't think the committee was thinking that we can approve or disapprove. I don't think we can only, as a committee, advise.
Right.
But we thought we would at least know what was approved. And now you're telling us, well, that's not going to happen. I just would appreciate if we knew that and not sitting around waiting, especially like Bill New Orleans, if he's here. I don't know if he's here, but
yeah.
He asked every meeting about it, and all of us, we were expecting something that is not going to happen. It's okay, because you all decide that, but that was something that we should have known, and we wouldn't be sitting here asking and waiting and expecting it.
Well, it is June, and we mentioned that it's not going out until the end of the summer, so I can only say that I don't know that there's that anything has really happened yet. The document's not out. It's not final. Nothing's changed since the last time we talked about it. And I think, you know, it's important. This committee also has asked the same kind of question before when we had the paratransit contracts, and we provided the same answer. And I just think there's a point where, you know, I mean, between the AAC and the RAC, you know, the staff is giving the committees enough information so that you can make a technical recommendation. But it's very important for members of the advisory committee to know that there are some limitations when we get into working with legal documents or working with procurements. And I know it isn't the first time we've discussed this, but we certainly had no intention to mislead anybody, but it's not going to even be going out for another few months. So it's still very early in the game. I don't think that the AAC has missed any opportunity to advise. And, you know, it's, I can tell you that the RAC probably would have been just as interested to see things like versions of the solicitation for the rail cars before the rail cars went out. And it's the same kind of restriction. You know, I know Mr. Sheehan has spoken about it a few times. He works for a federal agency. He explained that, you know, he understood these requirements as well. So I'm just going to say that if I wasn't clear, then what I have said this evening about the process for procurement applies to this one, and it applies to all of the solicitations that Metro does. Any time that we would be awarding a contract where money is involved, then those would be the rules.
All right,
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, let me do this, because we have customer comp period. Let me get to the customers on that list, and then I've added I have Denise, Bill, Tappan, Marissa, and Pat. Can have their comments after on this topic. And I'm going to put you on there. Mr. Kent should remain so he can answer your questions. I'm going to do it that way. That way I can get to the customers on the customer comment period who are here eagerly waiting. So let's go with Billie Jean Armstrong, and I have everyone else down already.
The bother after.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. I already got that. All right, so someone can give Billie Armstrong a mic. And someone can start the timer.
Yes, I came here reluctantly some years ago, and because I was told it was useless. But I have found out there have been some changes, but some still stay the same. I'm very disappointed because so many told me they were going to make me aware of this trip out to the call center, because I was invited long before you all had this group trip. And then to find out you had it, and no one that said they cared for me would make sure that I would get this call. So you had the trip without me. And I'm very disappointed about that, because as usual, you don't stick to your word. But what I didn't understand, I was informed that you went to pick up a deceased woman who had been dead to go to this meeting, and also jeopardized the driver's life. But I don't understand how, if you have to be authorized and certified, how could you even get somebody and I'm alive and you forget me when I bring up about the call center all the time? Also, a young man I told you about a long time ago, well, really during the winter, that when they had the protest, I said, you all would not, and I'm just saying you all, when we tried to get them to cancel us from picking him up because we were in a protest situation and had him to wait for over an hour and something in the freezing cold just to pick him up to go to Glen Arden, and he had to go all the way uptown, and I brought that to your attention. I said, as a young man who goes that way all the time, so why don't you all put him on the same van? But you know, last month, he's riding with me again all the way uptown and could have ridden with the fellow who goes right out of his right at his way. Also, last month, they brought my office number. They no-showed me because they're on the wrong side of the building, and they're calling me at home to take me home. So how did I get home? So I'd like to know, and I want to comment, commendation for the supervisor are so much better now. I don't know if this is the call center. Each one of them helped me to get a ride. You all are now using the numbers on 200 Constitution instead of where you changed it to 3rd and C, because they kept going to the wrong side of the building. And then they're doing the same thing and they're leaving people, which they've left me several times. I've had several lateness. I've had several no-shows. One driver even was convinced in the supervisor she was in the right place, but me and three security people could see that she wasn't, so she sort of put the van in a hidden area. But I just don't understand why, of all trips, that you all will forget me when I was invited before they even had it, for me to be able to go to some place that you say we definitely would not forget you. I'm forgetting a lot of things because I'm running behind, and while a person is on a script, they pick me up, the person should have been at work, they are late because they are picking me up, and things like that. But you still have some improvement, but there still should be some type of program that when someone has talked to you and said, your van will be there, and then the other person no-shows you because they don't know the supervisor said it was a problem to wait. Thank you.
And who wants to address that? Ms. Anderson?
I can certainly address that.
Mr. Chair, if I could ask Ms. Anderson before she does address this, did any of these incidents come through our complaint process? And I don't know if maybe I should ask our friend.
Did you take any of the things that you just told us and try to call the complaint line or try to, you know, at the time that you said that you'd been left and there were a few other
things? Oh, yes, that's how I know the supervisors, because they began to know me. They said, don't tell me they did this again.
But this is Where's My Ride you're talking about, right? Not like...
Oh, I don't deal with the complaint, because half the time I'm so sick and tired, I'm sorry, and we're doing something that still happens, so... I'd rather deal with the situation right there, get me a ride, get home, than to go through all the details. And it's still the same thing.
Well, I want to tell you, and I appreciate you bringing these to these concerns up today, because even though I almost didn't recognize you without your Redskins cap, but we'll talk about that later, because I wasn't sure why it wasn't on. I thought it needed to be there, but that's all right. We'll overlook that part. But... it's important for the customers who are here today and who are listening into the meeting to understand one thing about the complaint process. You know, we've gone a long way. As a matter of fact, there's a lady named Darnese Henry Bush who's here. He knows what I'm going to say. That, you know, when we go all the way back to 2004, when there was a class action suit against Metro about the quality of paratransit service. And one of the things that was part of that suit was that the plaintiff said, well, you know, we not only do we think that your service isn't reliable, but we also don't feel that you have a reliable mechanism to take complaints and respond to people. That people call you and tell you that the service is bad and you don't do anything about it, and your complaint responses aren't timely, your complaint responses aren't true, they're not, you know, nothing is happening. Metro went to great lengths to put the system in place that you have now, which you say, okay, well, I call the complaint line and they say, I'm sorry. Well, they used to not say they were sorry, okay? So, sorry is step one, right? We need to be sorry if we inconvenienced you, okay? So, it may not be much of a comfort, but it's the right thing for them to say to you, as Metro to you, the customer, you should not have had this happen. The next thing that they do is that they record your complaint in our computer system, and it is taken by a department at Metro, the customer service department, which is not run by my group. So they're independent. All they do is take all the complaints. So the reason why they do that is so that way, in case Mr. Kent wants to count the complaints, and I've got five, and I go, well, that's one, 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 instead of one, two, three, right? You know, so I can't count them. They count them. They inventory them in the system. Once they go into the system, they are a matter of record, okay? And that does a lot of things for you as a customer. We have official record of what happened to you. We have statistics that show how many customers complain, so that when the staff goes to the board and tells them, well, as far as we know, we think we're doing okay, you can't show in the customer service statistics that there's a problem. If people don't call and use that complaint system, it's very important that you do that, right? And then they call you back within 2 days and say, yes, Ms. Armstrong, we got your complaint and we're working on it, or we need information from you, something like that. So you get confirmation back, and then they do a resolution where they basically say, if it's the dispatcher saying they're wrong or whoever it was, the answer to the complaint comes in, okay, we got her address wrong, or the dispatcher made a mistake, or what have you, driver made a mistake. Then Ms. Anderson comes into play, reviews all of these responses along with our friends from MTM to make sure that your complaint actually got a response. So we have all this stuff in place to try to get at what went wrong. So I'm just going to say to you that you have my sympathy, because I'm not a patient person. I don't like to be kept waiting. I sure'd be hot if I got left. I can tell you that. Okay? But if that happened, I'd be sure to register my complaint. Because all these people who come to these committee meetings, my staff's here, the contractors are here, we're here because we're trying to follow up on customer service issues. So it's very, very important. I apologize, Mr. Chair, for taking the extra time. I think it's important that everybody knows that even if you feel like you've called more than once, every time that you call, it does have an effect because it tells us, okay, well, we didn't get it right. We got it wrong again, and we need to know that. So I know, Ms. Armstrong, you must be in shock that I am asking you to call and complain, but I am actually asking you to call and complain.
Not only I'm sorry, but sometimes the hold is so long unless they change that. And the other thing, if I'm speaking to a supervisor, the supervisor doesn't take records of this to inform you all what has happened?
No.
Oh, okay.
The folks on Where's My Ride put notes into their system, but it's the dispatch system, it's not the complaint system. When you call in a complaint and they start working on your complaint, they can pull from those notes to help find the answer, but they are two separate.
And see, I didn't know that. I thought this was relayed over.
No, it's not
like
automatic.
Oh, okay. So I will do that.
Yeah, because think about this. If the dispatcher solves your problem and you don't call and complain, we're going to assume that you're satisfied. You have to register a complaint for us to then do the investigation.
Okay. I thought I went to the supervisor, so now I understand. Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Anderson, did you have anything to add, and then we'll move on?
I just had one thing to add. You mentioned about the geocoding not being correct at the Department of Labor.
Right.
Yeah.
We had changed it from 200 Constitution because they kept no showing.
Right.
So we went to 3rd and C.
Right.
And I noticed within the last 2 months, they are reading 200. I said, no, we are not using this. Metro uses 3rd and C.
Right.
So ever since whatever happened, went back in the system at 200, they are waiting around the corner and no-showing people.
Okay.
And then that way, that's how I end up calling. But I don't know how my phone number got dropped off, you know,
okay,
until I found out I went home. And they said, your ride is outside, and I'm at home. No. And then that's when I called back. So that part has straightened, you know, gotten straight again.
Okay. Because we could take a look at that.
No, but the phone number's back in now.
The phone number's back in. All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kent, stay in your hot seat because the next set of customers are...
Well, that's why I'm glad that you said it. I took the time to go over this. Now that's another thing. I'm asking the committee now. I understand when we put the tour together, I heard someone say that it was going to be just the committee, and that's what ended up happening.
But nobody's just the committee.
They didn't call me because they said, Ms. Armstrong, as much as you talk about it, we're going to make sure you go. So they should have made sure they called me so I wouldn't have been upset.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I'll tell you what I think we owe you, and I think what we should do is we're gonna talk a little bit internally about whether or not that's something that we could put together to do again, where we could allow further participation. One of the reasons why sometimes we don't invite the public is because in certain operational parts of Metro, there are some security restrictions sometimes. Just some areas are you have restricted access for insurance and for other reasons like that. So let me ask. Let me make sure there's no official reason why we couldn't do that, and maybe we can do this again where we can allow more people to look, because I tell you, if you came away with, you know, some of the impressions I've heard from the committee members, I think that would be very positive for some members of the public to see exactly what's going on the other end of that radio. So that is something
this first. So I've been invited for a couple of years.
Well, and I am going to speak to Mr. Gray about doing that because I realize that it's probably, it was your fault, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's right. Ladies and gentlemen, I have just demonstrated the value of contracting.
All right. All right. So next on the list is Burlene's 3 minutes. And hold on, Mr. Kim, because these are all for you. So.
I'm here.
For some time, I was suggesting...
Oh, he needs a mic.
...should be made available to the committee before it was actually issued. What I was told, what we were all told, was that very generalized 3 or 4 page... number of expectations, in fact, was to be the RFI. I tend to disbelieve that what was finally issued to the industry was just those 4 or 5 pages of very generalized expectations. In any event, I then suggested that the response to the RFI should be made available to the committee so the committee could assess the kinds of responses. Was held more that those are proprietary. Those are only going to be considered by staff in-house. But the RFP would be forthcoming, and I thought the suggestion was that the committee would have a chance to look at the RFP. Last month it was suggested, no, the committee could look at the RFP because there would be proprietary questions and maybe expectations in the RFP that the committee shouldn't have a chance to look at. But the committee would be given a copy of the scope of work, and now today I hope you heard it, that the scope of work won't be shared with the committee, except maybe in very generalized outline form, because even the scope of work would be considered proprietary. Here's my suggestion, that procurement, not only in this agency, but in any agency, in any public agency, procurement should be as open and transparent a process as it's possible to be. And while maybe respondents to any RFI or RFP will have some financial information contained in their response that should be considered proprietary, although frankly, I would argue it should not. But I'm willing to concede that some people would think that should be proprietary, individual commercial entities, financial statements. That aside, it should be as open and transparent as possible. So here's my suggestion. I'm asking the committee to maybe ask Mr. Kent and staff, have a proposals meeting. Have it either on the first Monday of the month or the third Monday of the month or some other day of the month in which the full committee or the subcommittee would be invited to listen to the proposals and see the types of entities, whether they be from Pennsylvania or just the local area. That proposals meeting will be noticed sufficiently to the industry that folks from Pennsylvania could come as well or elsewhere in the nation or around the world. But have the proposals meeting here so that the committee could have a chance to see what's in the documents and hear the responses from the folks that might be submitting a proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Did someone want to respond?
So I can only say, well, actually, I need to ask Bill a clarifying question. Bill, do you mean that, are you talking about like a pre-proposal conference where the vendors come here?
Yes, and at that time, presumably the vendors would receive, and since I'm envisioning the AAC being invited to that activity, the AAC members and the rest of us who might make that meeting would have a chance to see what's in the proposal document. And here the respondents during the pre-proposal meeting, when they ask a question, well, does this mean we have to do this, or does this mean we can't do that? And the committee would have a chance to hear the response.
I think that that is a reasonable request, and it is an option that we have with contracts to have a pre-bid conference. There's still time to do that with this particular activity. I will take that request back to procurement.
Thank you. All right. Mm-hmm. Next on the list, still stay there, Mr. Kent. I'm going to do Marissa Leos, 3 minutes.
Why is that true? Paul, do you want me to make a motion so that we can have the once-a-year field trip to the operations center? Would that help?
I'm going to actually add it to my work plan that we're probably going to discuss next meeting to make that happen.
Okay, I can help make sure it happens next meeting.
Thank you. Next on the list is Denise Rush. 3 minutes.
I have customers who are asking me a question that I really don't understand, and I need clarification. When they make a trip, say, and it's non-rush hour, the cost may be $3.20. Metro Access picks them up late, and then they arrive late to their appointment, and they make an arrangement with a dispatch that call when you're ready, and they'll pick them up later. And that time, it might be rush hour time. Does the cost change for the ride?
No. The cost of the trip remains what it was quoted at the time of the reservation. Even if the trip has to be moved after the fact, the fare doesn't change.
Okay, thank you. Okay. SafeTrack. I don't use the Metro that much, but is it affecting Metro Access service since a lot of people were changed to the travel?
No. No, it has not, and it won't, because as we've said before, Metro Access just can't say no. We can't turn anyone away. So we are prepared for the customers who are conditionally eligible and we're riding bus and rail. If their trips are affected during SafeTrack and they want to return to Metro Access, they will be accommodated.
And I don't think you understood my question. Is it affecting Metro Access now, you know, since the change of SafeTrack? And people aren't using the Metro because they can't, or it's canceled, or the services?
I don't believe so, Ms. Rush. We've been able to operate as normal during SafeTrack.
In fact, if she's looking, is there trends where there's more trips?
No.
Due to SafeTrack?
Not that we're aware of, no.
Okay.
Okay, well, we'll ask again next month.
All right.
Because they got to go somewhere.
Well, it's not everybody that is told that they're going to have a delay on the rail system automatically stops riding, first of all, okay? Especially when they have the opportunity to ride it for free.
Okay.
All right. So, you know, the economic benefit is very strong, as you all have reminded us many times, Ms. Bellamy especially, right? You know, the income challenges in the disability community are very real. So that free ride benefit is important, and there are people who say, I don't like it, I don't want to be delayed, but if the trip remains free, then I guess I'll make do. And that's what we're seeing so far.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Next is Tappan Banerjee. We're at 6 o'clock at Tappan. Carolyn, and then Pat will have the last word, and then we are done. And then I have a quick announcement to make.
Mr. Chairman, I think I have received my answer from Mr. Kent. The only one correction I'd like to make is what I like to ask. But one thing that I have to correct, that it's not Dr. Banerjee's bus, it's Dr. Banerjee's free taxi.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
And I'd like to yield my time to my distinguished colleague, Patrick Sheehan.
Oh, and before that, I have Carolyn, and then Pat has the last word.
Mr. Kent, I have two questions. One is a question on the fact that I am very sincerely going to get upset if hometown people don't get a chance first. I have a problem with a lot of outsiders coming in. Mm-hmm. We have contractors right here who have not, you know, small contractors that was with Metro Access. And I think we should go back to some of those who are very capable, know the city,
have trained drivers, and I wonder if there's some kind of way you're going to take a look at them first.
So I want to give you what I hope will make you feel better. Good answer on that. The requirements to be a contractor for Metro Access are very hard for some businesses to meet, small or otherwise, in town or otherwise. You have praised us as a committee for raising the bar and making them work harder. Some of the companies that we had in the past said, why are you being so picky? We were with you before. Why suddenly is the standard so high now? Some of them have said that they think that they wish that we would lower some of those standards.
But they learned.
Well, that's true. And all of these contracts are not permanent. They all come up for bid. They all come back again. But I'll say this much. This new trend of everybody starting to look around for new ways to transport people other than Metro Access is a huge opportunity for the smaller companies in this region to step back into the picture because of the fact that it's not going to be called an ADA paratransit service. Now, that doesn't mean I'm saying it's not going to be accessible. I just mean it does not have to be exactly like Metro Access in every way. And for that reason, that opens the door to a lot of small companies to participate. I think it's a win-win to promote small business and to serve the customers with more options at the same time. I think it's a great idea. So I'm all for it.
Next question. I've always had a problem with this. I know a lot of customers and I don't like it. But I have a problem with the free trips. I've had that problem for a number of years. I'm looking at what could be done with that money and how much is it. So, you know,
the ones that we give when we're
late. That you give away. Because twofold. One, you're giving a person a free, it's giving so that customer, I want my free trip. Do I get a free trip? You know, that sort of thing. I would much rather customers say, you know what, Metro Access is doing a pretty great job. And customers don't understand. I think some customers that I deal with wait for you to be a minute late so they can get a free trip. So I'd like to do something to have a committee or something. I'd like to get a better understanding of what could we do with that money that we're giving away to make life on Metro Access better. You know, you understand? And maybe it might be a committee here and a committee in a joint task force with you all, because there's something better that can be done than giving out a free trip.
Thank you, Ms. Bellamy.
Okay.
All right, Pat, you have the last word, and then I need to make a quick announcement, and we need to adjourn. Yeah. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, you don't want me to answer her question?
Oh.
let me just say that I understand your point, Ms. Bellamy. I think that what you need to know is that the free trip credits that we give out when we're late are part of Metro's fare policy, which is written in a document called the tariff. And the tariff is a listing of all of our fares. It can only be changed by board action. And the board is already on record saying that they're most likely to make changes to the tariff every other year when they do the budget. So that fare policy working group that the AAC already has probably should keep this in mind if there's ever a point in the future when the budget's being discussed and you hear Metro saying we're considering making changes to the fare, that would be an opportunity to say, well, you know, before you talk about changing the Metro Access fare, what about these? Because I don't know, I mean, if you discuss it at times in between the budget, they're going to say, well, the board's not in a position to act on it at this point. Because that's what it would take.
And my assumption is that the board, you know, in between budget sessions is not going to be like, well, you know, let's take this moment in time to do something, to essentially to take something back from the Metro Access Rider in isolation when we're not dealing with financial issues. I mean, I think it would be hard for the board to do that.
But it was temporary, after only temporary act of part of the lawsuit that had been going on for a long time. I just want to take a look at
it. You know where it came from? The MV offered to provide a one-way trip when they proposed back in 2005. When we awarded the contract, Metro matched that, and we provided the return trip, and we made it our practice since then. Then it became part of the tariff. So now it's as permanent as anything around here until the board decides to change it. So it's, you know, it's nobody said that it was temporary. It's as changeable as anything else that the board governs.
Thank you. Last word. Mr. Kent, I liked and I applaud Bill Orlean's suggestion of a pre-bid conference.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully you'll take that back at a favorable answer. We've done it before. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good way to get information into the and out from the committee. So mm-hmm. Good idea, Bill. I like that.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. And the last thing we want to do is...
Mr. Chair, I got one comment before you give your last words. I just want to remind everybody that the Virginia Emergency Exercise is coming up on June 26th. It's at the Greensboro Metro Rail Station. If any AAC members are interested in participating, if they could let me know tonight, that would be helpful so that we can share that information. And for anybody who is interested, the waiver is still required to participate in the exercise. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We want to give a round of applause for Bill Staderman for his service on the AAC. Because he's here tonight, and we do want to recognize the two new people on the... Okay. But we have new members here, and we will try to welcome them at the next meeting at the beginning, because I think they will be joining us as of July 1st. Any other new members? It's just two? Just two? Okay. All right. And motion to adjourn?
So
all right. All those in favor, please do so by saying aye. Nays, abstentions, carries.
Okay, time for another one.
Great. Well.